Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Restaurant labor leader responds to Paula Deen controversy because restaurant workers' discrimination is as American as apple pie.
You know, Lisa Jackson was the woman who sued Paula Deen, celebrity chef, and she said that her lawsuit had never been about the N-word. Its purpose was to address Deen's patterns of disrespect and degradation of people that she deems to be inferior. The former manager at Deen's restaurant, Uncle Bubba's Seafood and Oyster House, sued Deen and her brother, Bubba Ayers, saying that the work environment was rife with discrimination and she could no longer tolerate Deen's abuse of power as an owner, nor Mr. Ayers' despicable behavior routinely. Unfortunately, the revelations about Deen's treatment of workers of color is neither new or unique in the restaurant industry. More than a third of all workers of color, when surveyed, reported experiencing discriminatory treatment on the basis of race, including verbal abuse and being passed over a promotion, racial epithets, and more.
This treatment has a real impact on the lives of workers and their families. Because they've been discriminated against, workers of color are segregated into the industry's lowest-paying positions and segments, for example, fast food rather than fine dining. Saru Jayaraman takes us behind the kitchen door to expose the extensive discrimination and hardships of restaurant workers. We're joined by Saru Jayaraman, co-founder and co-director of the Restaurant Opportunity Centers United, director of the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley, and author of Behind the Kitchen Door, a new book which has a lot of important information.
And, Saru, it's wonderfully vivid and vital and well-written. It's really a work of poetry as well.
Oh, and, thank you.
Oh, goodness, is it nice to speak with you again.
I haven't enjoyed a book like this in a long time.
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice of you.
And let's start there. Why did you, given the work that you do in the with the restaurant workers, why did you feel the necessity, the imperative to respond to the Paula Deen controversy? What's the context between that and the kind of plight of restaurant workers?
Yeah, I mean, this is why we wrote the book, is to help the consuming public especially understand that what happened with Paula Deen was no exception, is not a unique incident, it's certainly not unique to the South or to just her or her brother. It is a very pervasive issue facing workers of color. And frankly, the kinds of treatment that workers were getting are faced by workers, even white workers in this industry. It is now the largest and fastest growing industries, or one of the two largest and fastest growing industries in the country. Unfortunately, it also happens to be the absolute lowest paying employer in the United States. And the worst kind of discrimination that workers of color in this industry face, and it is the largest employer of people of color in the United States, the worst kind of discrimination is often the discrimination that people don't even know. You know, it's not the being called the N-word. I mean, that's horrible and miserable, and it's abusive and creates emotional scars for a lifetime. Don't get me wrong. But there's this other very deep and pervasive segregation and discrimination that most workers don't even know when they've been discriminated against. I mean, imagine this. You're a worker. You work in a fast food restaurant. You think you can make more money working in a fine dining restaurant. You know you can. But, you know, in some cases, it can be a quintupling of wages. You go and apply, and you have no idea, you know, who's applied before you or after you, but you get denied, and then you go home. So you have no idea whether you've just been discriminated against or not. You're simply told there isn't a position for you. Well, what we've found is that, because this is the part workers don't even know, is that when we sent in pairs, hundreds of pairs of white and people of color applicants into fine dining restaurants, even in New York City, which may consider itself to be more progressive, more racially just, perhaps, than Uncle Bubba's Seafood Restaurant, we found that white workers had twice the chance of a person of color of getting a livable wage, fine dining, waitstaff, or bartending position. And these livable wage jobs are few and far between in the restaurant industry, but they're held almost exclusively by white workers. And what it means for millions of workers of color and immigrants in the United States is that they're relegated to lower-level positions in fine dining restaurants, like bussers, runners, and what we call the back of the house, the kitchen, and lower-level segments, so casual restaurants, fast food. And it means extreme poverty for millions of workers in this industry. It means the inability to put food on their family's table. Sometimes it means homelessness. It often means living from paycheck to paycheck with no benefits and no health care. It often means, you know, going into extreme debt or having very traumatic situations. So it means a lot more. I think, as this woman said, it means a lot more than simply being called the N-word. It means dignity, respect, and the ability to actually support oneself and one's children.
Sure, let's dig a little bit deeper behind the kitchen door, and let's talk about wage theft and tips and paid sick days and all the other things that are struggles for certainly 10 million workers in the restaurant industry, really large number of workers.
Yes. 1 in 12 Americans now works in the restaurant industry. And it's such a large and growing industry, as you just said, and yet it also happens to be the absolute lowest paying employer in the United States. 7 of the 11 lowest paying jobs in America, and the 2 absolute lowest paying jobs in America are restaurant jobs. And it's not because, you know, how can you have the industry that's the largest and fastest growing that also is the absolute lowest paying? It's not because this industry suffers from razor-thin profit margins, as they like to say. In fact, this industry has 4 to 5 times the profit margins of Walmart, which is generally considered to be one of the most profitable companies in America. No, the real reason that it's the absolute lowest-paying employer while being the largest is that it also happens to have the most organized employer lobby of any industry in the United States, which is the National Restaurant Association, which we like to call the other NRA. Back in 1996, the other NRA, under the leadership of Herman Cain, struck a deal with Congress saying that they wouldn't oppose an overall minimum wage increase as long as the minimum wage for tipped workers stayed frozen forever. So it's been stuck at $2.13 at the federal level for the last 22 years. Now, we were part of a coalition that got that raised in New York State to $5. But as you probably know, even in New York State, recently, the minimum wage went up. Tipped workers were left out again because of a deal struck with the Restaurant Association and with Darden Restaurants, which is Olive Garden and Red Lobster. And so you've got again and again and again this industry lobby striking these behind-closed-doors deals with legislators that leave restaurant workers out of minimum wage increases. In New York City, restaurant workers were effectively left out of the paid sick day bill that just passed. Again and again and again, it's the people who touch your food who are being excluded from the very bills that would protect not only these workers, but frankly, the public's health when you go out to eat.
One of the other things that, which really is all just part of this, because I know that you're about to launch a campaign and there is a report soon to be released exposing the restaurant industry's mistreatment of mothers.
Yes, yes. Unfortunately, so, you know, I told you that the National Restaurant Association struck this deal saying that tip minimum wage would be stuck forever. Well, very sadly, 70% of people, women, people who work on that lower tip minimum wage are women. 70% of the people who earn this lower, what we call a sub-minimum wage across the country are women. And they're mothers, you know, 1 in 4 of them are mothers. 1 in 10 of them are single mothers. So, you know, the industry likes to say, oh, it's fine that these workers earn $2.13 or just $5 an hour. They're rolling in tips. And sometimes if you live in New York City and you go to fine dining restaurants, you may think that, when in fact the vast majority of workers who live on the tip minimum wage in New York City, in New York State, across the country, are women who work at the Olive Garden and IHOP and Applebee's and the Red Lobster. And they earn, you know, they work graveyard shifts and they earn next to nothing. And that's why servers in America have 3 times the poverty rate of the rest of the U.S. workforce and use food stamps at double the rate of the rest of the U.S. workforce, which means that the women who put food on our tables can't afford to eat themselves, let alone afford childcare you know, let alone afford to take a day off when they're sick. I mean, if you're reliant on tips, you would never take a day off if you were sick. You would continue to work. And you're often told that you'll be fired if you don't. So, you know, if you have to take a day off to take care of a sick child, or because the child care provider is saying, come get the child is sick, you will lose your job. So we're actually releasing a report on the issue and actually a short film as well that Danny Glover's film company, Louverture Films, has produced on the issue about one of our members who actually did lose her job for going to go get her child out of school at a restaurant. She lost her job at a restaurant. So these are real struggles faced by women across the country. And this is all because the Restaurant Association has managed to strike this deal and proudly proclaim that they've won $1 billion in exemptions for themselves where they don't have to pay their own workers' wages. No, in fact, they say customers should have to pay our workers' wages for us. We can pay $2.13 or $3 or $4 or $5, and the remainder will be paid by tips, and that kind of setup creates for the most unstable economic situation for millions of women across America that you can possibly think of.
Sure. I know that one of the most exciting areas right now in organizing, both in New York and across the country, have been these rolling strikes of workers in the fast food industry. And I know that you've been or your group has been organizing the Capital Grille campaign, which is owned by that same conglomerate, Darden. So if you want to talk about these kinds of organizing opportunities and the excitement of that and the possibilities of change in the industry.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of exciting things happening right now. And one is that there's actually a bill in Congress that's actually moving through Congress called the Fair Minimum Wage Act of 2013. So a couple of years ago, we had our first big victory. We got Congresswoman Donna Edwards from Maryland to introduce the first bill in U.S. history that addressed the needs of tipped workers and proposed giving them a raise so that the tip minimum wage would be repegged at 70% of the regular, basically overcoming the legacy of Herman Cain. And then the bigger victory was getting Democratic leadership in the House and the Senate this year to introduce a comprehensive minimum wage bill that wholly subsumed Donna Edwards' proposal and basically proposed raising the minimum wage to $10.10 and the tip minimum wage to $7, which would give hundreds of thousands of workers in New York City and New York State a raise, and millions of workers across the country, 30 million workers would get a raise out of this bill. At least 6 or 7 million would be immediately lifted out of poverty in the restaurant industry, and the majority of those, again, are people of color, coming back to what we were talking about earlier. So it's a very exciting thing, and the reason why we're going after Darden is both because workers of color actually approached us saying that they were experiencing severe discrimination and racial segregation, very similar to what we were talking about in Paula Deen's restaurant at the Capitol Grille, but also because Darden has been a leader within the National Restaurant Association and outside of it, fighting against raising the minimum wage, particularly for tipped workers, and fighting against paid sick days. In fact, Darden got together with the National Restaurant Association and ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and they've been introducing bills now in 14 states that would preemptively prohibit any city within those states from passing local paid sick days ordinances, and they've passed in 8 states already. And so Darden has been a real leader in vitriolically, with tons of money, advocating against a raise to the tip minimum wage and against paid sick days ordinances from passing and engaging in this kind of severe racial segregation. And most recently, they've been a very vocal advocate against having to allow their workers to enroll in the exchanges that will come about with the Affordable Care Act. In fact, they announced that they were going to reduce all of their workers' hours to less than 30 when the ACA was ruled constitutional. And, we were part of organizing consumer outrage around that, and they announced that their S&P rating went down as a result of consumer outrage over that announcement, which just shows, you know, that consumers have tremendous power to get a company even like Darden, you know, an industry leader with 200,000 workers, the largest full-service restaurant company in America, getting them to do the right thing. Consumers managed to do that. So we know that consumers have the power to get them to also do things like set the right standard with regard to the minimum wage and paid sick days.
Well, you know, what an enormously creative and exciting group you helped form, and which has a national context now. It's gone the, aside from what Ken mentioned about participating in fast food strikes, the Darden campaign, which we see in New York, in particular against the Capitol Grill. The fact of the matter is that there's a phenomenal co-op, really worker-owned restaurant, Colors, that was built on the ashes of the deaths of restaurant workers at the Windows of the World. I mean, I am just in awe by the excitement, really, that you bring to the movement. And as we kind of, and I know you're in transit also. And you're in the airport. But I just want you to really maybe kind of summarize for us some of the work that will continue to be done so that people who, one, eat out and enjoy restaurants, understand who is cooking their food and washing their dishes and how to support them and how to make sure this huge industry of workers, immigrants, people of color who bring their passion to servicing us can finally get their just dessert.
Definitely. So, you know, we realized about a year ago that we've been organizing workers now for 12 years, and we've got about 10,000 worker members, and we continue to grow. And we've been organizing employers even, and we've got about 100 really good, what we call high road employer partners around the country who are doing the right thing, providing good wages. They've actually formed an alternative to the National Restaurant Association called RAISE, Restaurants Advancing Industry Standards and Employment. And they've gone to Congress with us to say we actually believe in an increase to the minimum wage, unpaid sick days. So we've organized workers and employers, and we thought, gosh, there's this third stakeholder, the biggest of all, that we haven't really organized, and it's every one of us that eats out. It's consumers. And so we launched a multi-year, multimedia consumer engagement campaign that has included the book Behind the Kitchen Door and short films made by Danny Glover's film company, Louverture Films, and a diner's guide. We created a diner's guide and smartphone app that you can download on your phone called the ROC National Diner's Guide. But ultimately, we are asking of consumers, everyone who eats out, to do three things, really. First, we're asking everybody to read the book, get the book, let everybody you know about the book. You know, it took a book like Fast Food Nation by Eric Schlosser and Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma to get consumers to demand locally sourced organic food and for that to actually change the industry. We got consumer demand led to restaurants across America providing locally sourced organic food. So the first thing is, if that could happen through books like that, everybody please read Behind the Kitchen Door and let others that you know to read the book so we can get educated and create consumer demand in that way too. So that's number one. Number two is that we've actually created a new website for consumers called thewelcometable.net. And already 100,000 consumers have signed a petition on that website letting Congress know enough is enough, raise this abysmally low minimum wage, raise it to $7 so that workers in New York and all over the country get a raise so they can have some economic stability. You can also find the diner's guide on that website, www.thewelcometable.net. And the very last thing, please don't think that you should just tip better. Please speak up every time you eat out at the end of your meal. You know, tell the manager or the owner, I love the food, I love the service, but I would love to see you pay a livable wage. I'd love to see you provide paid sick days. These things are important to me as a consumer.
And the final thing is read Behind the Kitchen Door, a must read for anyone who eats in restaurants who cares about workers. And the cover's gorgeous too, which is Behind the Kitchen Doors. Saru Jayaraman, for all the work that you do for the 10 million restaurant workers, we thank you, and for adding that spark of life and energy to organizing workers in this country. And
thank you so
they
much.
Will get their just desserts with leaders like you. And again, we've been speaking to Saru Jera Rahman.
And Saru, keep up the good work, and also
thank you so much.
RockUnited.org.
These workers and many of us were just at the Darden shareholders meeting. We're a national restaurant workers organization with about 10,000 members in 19 cities around the country. We founded the organization just after 9/11 with workers who lost their jobs at Windows on the World, the restaurant at the top of the World Trade Center, several of whom are here today. But due to demands from workers all over the country seeking assistance, seeking help, seeking all kinds of, needing help, really, with regard to wage theft, discrimination, and opportunities to advance, we've grown very rapidly based on worker demand. So this actually came about for the same reason. Workers from Darden approached us from all over the country saying that they had experienced wage theft, discrimination, unsustainably low wages, and that a lack of paid sick days was not only hurting their own ability to maintain job security because they would be told that they could be fired if they took a day off when sick, but also very much hurt the public's health and ultimately the company's reputation, as I'm going to describe. So this particular report, Darden's decision, is really about just that, the fact that the company has a choice at this moment. The company can continue to take the path of unsustainably low wages and working conditions, lack of paid sick days, or it could take the high road and really, we think, improve its brand, improve its reputation, improve its investor stock, and improve working conditions for workers. One of the key things we found as really potentially damaging the company's brand was the lack of paid sick days. So last fall, a worker in Fayetteville, North Carolina, did not have access to paid sick days while working at Olive Garden, was forced to work with hepatitis A. As a result, 3,000 customers of the restaurant had to be tested by the local health department for whether they had been exposed to hepatitis A, and as a result, ended up filing a consumer class action against the company for exposing them to this very, dangerous disease. The worker, for his part, had no choice but to work, given the fact that he would have been fired, given the company's paid sick days policy, which says, that you need a doctor's note to be able to take time off. You have no paid time off. And when you're earning $2.13, as tipped workers earn in North Carolina, you cannot afford to take a day off when sick. So the company's lack of paid sick days, unfortunately, goes right up against one of their proclaimed core values, one of their proclaimed central kind of tenets with which they really want to proceed forward, which is providing healthy food.
Para agregarle algo, pues, si usted no llega a trabajar, le piden.
And if one is sick, if you want to call in sick, you have to show a doctor's notice. But how is one going to afford to go to the doctor to get a note from them? And so you're stuck. If you call in sick that same day, they tell you if you don't have a doctor's note, you have to come in.
Y pues algo responsable específicamente donde yo trabajé, específicamente en ese.
And specifically in my workplace, I place the blame on the manager and on the chef because they see how people cut themselves, they see how people hurt themselves, and at the end of the day, they put the blame on the employees.
We then joined the workers and community groups that gathered outside of Darden, the shareholders meeting, to express our concern about the dangerous path that Darden is taking. And now we're here, to participate on this call to Darden to reevaluate its policy that denies workers such basic rights as access to paid sick days.
Darden often pays the lowest wages possible to its employees and has been sued for engaging in wage theft.
When businesses provide these basic benefits for their employees, they make up for it in greater productivity and lower turnover costs. Employees in places that have passed these kinds of earned sick days, including California and Connecticut, have found it as a reasonable regulation that provides long-term benefits to their businesses. Kevin Wesley, who is the Golden State Restaurant Association Executive Director, after staunchly opposing and fighting earned sick days for years, has said that they are the best public policy for the least cost. This report itself say today costs as little as 10 cents per hour to protect their employees and provide these paid sick days.
In 2011, Darden was forced to pay $100,000 in back wages and fines by the Department of Labor for wage and hour violations, and has settled numerous claims of wage theft totaling almost $14 million. Now, the company says that over the next 5 years, it expects to make an additional $4 billion in profit. The company has been accused of engaging in blatant race discrimination and segregation through multiple lawsuits, including many workers here who have filed EEOC claims for lack of advancement, promotions practices that deny workers of color the opportunities to advance to livable wage jobs in the company. The company has actually aggressively lobbied against paid sick days policies and against a raise to the tip minimum wage. That report profiles numerous employers, many of whom are competitors to Darden, who've managed to make a profit while providing paid sick days, while providing sustainable wages and working conditions. And in fact, those companies have stated that those kinds of policies reduce turnover, increase productivity, and have actually increased the overall profitability of the company. Darden can use its resources to invest in its workers, ultimately helping the company earn long-term profits and create a brand image of genuine sustainability.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.